And we welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven, the first Gateway of Baseball Heaven of 2020. It's not our, we don't mark our seasons this way. We still have a couple left in season three, if you will. But Tara and I are here. That is Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black, as always, and at Tara Wellman on Twitter. I'm Daniel Shoptaw. I might not sound like Daniel Shoptaw, but I am from C70 at the Bat and at C70 on Twitter. Tara and I haven't had a chance to really sit down and talk much about the Cardinals since, middle of last month. And we've missed so much. Tara, what have we missed?
So many days of silence is what we've missed. There's honestly not been a ton of baseball news, with the exception of a couple of teams that are out there doing things and getting things done and looking exciting. Looking at you, White Sox. Pretty much everyone else is kind of just like, that was a fun break. Let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks. But no, I mean, we're at that point, first week of January, looking at spring training coming up. Pitchers and catchers reporting doesn't seem like a far off mystery date. It's actually a real time and a real place, and it's coming up faster than probably pitchers and catchers would like for it to. I'm sure that offseason closes up very quickly, but we'll start to see some reports out of Jupiter much earlier than that, probably. So a lot of silence at this point. That's about all we've missed, but hopefully we're past the peak silence and we'll start to hear some, even if it's just some rumblings of things as we go on from here.
Yeah, and before we get into the Cardinals, I do think you referenced the White Sox, and I think the White Sox, along with the Reds, and the Reds for a different reason, but the White Sox have been very fascinating over the last, especially this winter, maybe over the last couple of years, but to see them kind of realize where their window's at, realize that they've got these young players, and then to lock these young players up so far in advance so that they don't, you know, as Mr. Kyle Reese is probably crying about right now, you know, the White Sox locked up Luis Robert even before he has a chance to play. So they don't have to worry about service time manipulation or anything like that. He's got a contract and he'll be on the roster. And so they have done a remarkable job of making that team, well, probably the favorites in that division. I don't look at it that closely, but it feels like, you know, it feels like this is a team that if they can go out and succeed this year and do so well, you know, maybe that starts to set, you know, a bit of a trend in baseball. And maybe we see some of these guys, especially these young guys, get their contracts a little bit earlier and, or, you know, people sign them so they don't have to be, you know, sending them down for a month and risk involving a grievance like the Cubs did with Chris Bryant.
Yeah. There's so much about the business of baseball that just sort of revolves around the status quo, right? Don't rock the boat. Don't be the team that changes it for everyone else. And I think that it's interesting to me to see how that shifts every once in a while, or to see a team that tries to shift the way that works. And maybe the White Sox are going to be part of that. We've seen these deals get done a couple of times where a guy who hasn't even played at the big league level is signed to a long-term contract. This one is the most notable, I think, in particular because the White Sox have put together a competitive team and it's still very young and there's still more coming. So to see the way that they've gone about now, let's be real. The White Sox were real bad for a long time to get to that point, but they were also very strategic. Yes, this offseason has been exciting for White Sox fans, but this has been building for the last several years in every trade that they made and in every choice that they made as far as who to keep and who to let go on their major league roster, because they were building to this point where they had all these top prospects. They had all of these first round draft picks, all of these big name international free agents that were going to be there arriving at essentially the same time, or at least within, you know, this same few year block of time that would give them the best chance to kind of create a window for themselves instead of just waiting for it to happen as it might naturally. So it's been a really interesting process for the White Sox. We don't quite know if it's going to work like it looks like it will at this point, but it definitely is the kind of situation that I feel like could shake up that status quo a little bit if it works. And I guess "it works," I'm doing air quotes, is a little bit undefined, because we look at what the Cubs did and that worked, but it also didn't work like everyone thought it would in creating a dynasty. It gave them a couple of good years and a World Series title, but it didn't last as long as a lot of people thought. And now they're stuck in a situation where they had all these young guys, they had all this young talent, and now they have to figure out how to pay for it. And they don't like the options that are in front of them with regards to that. So what happens to the White Sox 5 years from now? Who knows? But they have everything. They have all the pieces in place to be really good and really competitive in that 5 year span, I think.
Yeah, especially like you said, with these young guys, they won't have to worry about how to pay for them because they're already paying. That's already factored in. They know what they're going to be paying for these guys.
The other thing that's interesting about that contract is that it goes beyond the upcoming CBA, which a lot of teams haven't been willing to do at this point. It seems like those contracts that go beyond that we don't really know what it's going to look like. There seems to be this sort of imaginary fence there, and not everybody wants to go past it yet. They just broke down the fence and we're like, nah, we're good. we feel pretty good about this moving forward. So it'll be interesting in that regard too, to see if it changes the way other teams around them do their business.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, some of that has been, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why the people haven't gone through this, the CBA, but part of it is, you know, are they going to have to pay those contracts when there's not revenue coming in? And, you know, if they do have to pay, they'd much rather pay, you know, $8-10 million a year, whatever they're paying these younger guys on this contract than Bryce Harper's $30 million or whatever it may be. So there's difference there, but there's a lot of, you're right, there's so much different on, and people really don't want to, because they don't know what's going to go on with that CBA. They don't know if the rookie scale is going to go up. If they don't know, you know, they have no idea what that thing's going to look like more than ever before. So, but we're not a White Sox podcast, so we're going to go ahead and move along to whatever the Cardinals are doing, which isn't much. It's been quiet. I guess the only thing that has happened since we recorded a show last was the signing of KK, because I'm not even going to try. I tried on Meet Me Mutual to say his name, and that probably did not go well. In fact, I still don't know that I've heard anybody say his name. I've read it printed, but I'm not sure I've actually heard it yet. So we'll go with KK, the pitcher from the Korean Baseball League, who has come over on a 2-year deal. Tara, it really feels like the Cardinals are quite comfortable with whatever metrics, whatever translations, whatever algorithms they may have about the Asian baseball leagues, because this is what, the third significant signing from there in the last, what, 5, 6, 7 years, I would say, when you're starting with someone. So they seem to at least feel like they can get something good out of these guys.
And they have, right? I mean, they've been fairly successful in doing just that. I think someone O's final season in St. Louis wasn't what everyone hoped it would be, but there was certainly a lot that they got out of him, maybe too much. Maybe that's why his final season wasn't as great, but they got a lot out of Sungwana Oh when he was there. And then, of course, Miles Mikolas coming out of a similar situation. There was not necessarily a book on him in as far as Major League Baseball was concerned, and the Cardinals felt really good about bringing him in and how he would be able to translate that to success on the major league scene. And he did. Last season was a bit more up and down. It was a little bit sporadic as far as his success, which I feel like a lot of people were disappointed by that. I don't know that it should have been surprising. It wasn't surprising to me, because I think at that point you have teams that know what he does and they can adjust. And then he has to be able to replicate. He has to not only be able to replicate what he did year one, but then figure out how to adjust to what teams are doing against him in year two. So there's a bit of a learning curve there. It's always a process to maintain that progress when you are coming from a different league like that. But the Cardinals have done a nice job of identifying talent that can translate pretty successfully on the major league scene. So I don't know that we can really say any more than that about KK at this point. We don't even know where he's going to fit into the overall pitching scheme for this team, but some depth and some depth that has experience, as opposed to just depth that is an arm that looked great at AA a year ago, I think is a good thing for this team right now.
Yeah, I think so. No, you're right. You have to wonder if you watch someone, and you watch Miles Michaelis take a step back in their second years. Now, Oh never quite recovered anywhere. I think he, you know, had some success out in Colorado, but and then, you know, we'll have to see with Miles Michaelis. But we have to, I guess we're still kind of, the jury is out on whether they can get consistent years out of him. But they only have him for 2 years. And if they get a good first year out of him, then the contract pays for itself. So I don't, it's about as low of a risk as you can get. $8 million plus, I think there were some incentives or whatever it may be. So, yeah, and you're right. That's the depth piece that they want, because they still don't 100% know what they're going to get with Carlos Martinez. You know, Carlos has been practicing, he's been training, he's been working out as he's going to be a starter. But until they get to Jupiter and until they see him in really spring training games, they're not going to feel too confident about him being there. And if you wait till spring training to find another starter, well, you're going to be stuck with Daniel Ponce de Leon and Austin Gomber and like that. That may be adequate, but not necessarily what you want to do when you're trying to win a division.
Yeah, and it's all, the pitching situation is such an interesting puzzle for me going into this spring because, man, I've been very much leading the charge of saying the Cardinals need another one or two starter that you know what you're getting. Maybe it's Gerrit Cole. Maybe it's, you know, the pipe dream of Max Scherzer. Maybe it's whomever it might be. Pick one of those guys. You need someone to complement Jack Flaherty as that 1-2 punch. The possibility of that being Carlos Martinez is still there. It's just not a given in any possible way. And I think too, let's be realistic. This got more complicated when all of a sudden Alex Reyes wasn't part of that equation, right? Because he was supposed to be, much like Carlos Martinez was, a top of the rotation kind of starter. And if you had Carlos Martinez and Alex Reyes and Jack Flaherty, there probably wouldn't be room for all of them in the same rotation because you'd be able to move one of those pieces to bring something else back in that is of the same level value, just in a different place. So this got complicated, I think, as far as the Cardinals and their plan of sort of design your own rotation from the guys within their own organization when those guys started getting hurt. And that sort of sidetracked some of their planning. So, what they do this year is going to be interesting because as much as I have said, they need another top of the rotation starter, they've chosen to not do that. And they've chosen to once again, depend on the depth that they have, whether it's veterans with some experience or young guys who have yet to prove themselves. And they've gotten away with that a number of times in the past. It just always seems like it's more complicated than it has to be. And I don't know how many times you can get away with that before it actually comes back to haunt you. So at some point, I mean, they have to have the offensive boost to complement the pitching, or it's going to be a disaster at some point in the season when one of those arms you think you can count on ends up going down.
It does feel like the Cardinals are perfectly content to have five starters that have an ERA plus of, you know, what, 105, 110, rather than having some, you know, two or three that are really, really good and a couple of others that might be below average. They'd rather be slightly above average across the board than have that dominance. And I think we've seen that not only in the pitching staff, but in the lineup as well. It goes back to last season when we were talking about, you know, the Bryce Harpers of the world and the Cardinals not playing in that market because they were perfectly content to just kind of be good enough. It feels like they're not necessarily, they don't see the value in being a, you know, a juggernaut, as Alex would say. And so, you know, we'll have to see. You're right. Alex Reyes has thrown a wrench in this, and it's still a situation that could resolve itself. It'd be great if it did, but I think everybody has given up on counting for anything from Alex Reyes. I think, well, you know, when he shows up in the major leagues at the end of the season, if he's pitched innings, then we'll believe he's actually there. But not until he's already pitched about 20 or 25 innings will we actually believe he's back. You know, as for Carlos, you know, Ben Fredrickson posted an interesting comment, I think, on one of the more recent best podcasts in baseball. And he said, you know, if Carlos is only going to be a one of those slightly above average starters, do you want him as a starter? Or would you rather have him as that sort of dominant closer, the guy that got the job done, even though he gave us heart attacks all the way through? And where is that line drawn? I mean, where do you find more value with him being in the bullpen? I know all of us want him to be a starter and all of us think he should be a starter, but I hadn't really given it much thought that there is an argument that if he's not going to be Carlos Martinez in the rotation, then maybe he doesn't need to be there.
You know, yes, it's certainly a fair question to ask, except that, and I keep telling myself I'm going to write this article on Carlos Martinez that I've been sort of planning in my mind for the last, I don't know, season and a half about Carlos Martinez, because I think there's this idea that he wasn't great. And he was. I mean, when he was healthy, yes, did he have some blow up games? Of course he did. Was he frustrating sometimes when he gave up runs in the first inning and then settled that? Yeah, sure. But he was also one of the best starters in the National League for multiple seasons. So this idea that somehow Carlos Martinez never lived up to his potential, I feel like it's a little bit twisted based on what the actual facts of his career have been. So of course, there's a recency bias, and we all see the fact that he didn't start last year, and we see that he went down the year before and was injured, and that the way they handled that whole thing was weird. And then he pitched when he probably shouldn't have because he wasn't totally healed or something that we'll never actually know what happened there. So the recency bias comes into play here, but I think it just does such a disservice to what Carlos Martinez not only is capable of, but what he has done, to ignore the fact that for at least two seasons, he was one of the most enjoyable starting pitchers in the entire National League to watch because he was that good. So I'm hesitating with that question. What if he's just sort of average? Because if he's healthy, he's never really been just sort of average. So I don't know where that comes from, except that he hasn't started the last 2 years. So I don't have the numbers in front of me to like really back that up and give you the actual statistical analysis to prove what I'm saying. But trust me, the couple of years where he was one of those top two guys, when we really started to think, okay, this is the Carlos Martinez that can be an ace, he was really, really good. Just lacking a bit of the consistency that I think we would want for him moving forward. So what happens if he's just sort of average? Then as a starter, then yeah, I guess maybe you don't want him as a starter if you have other options that are better. The question with Carlos Martinez the last couple of years has continued to be, how does he provide, not even the last couple of years, man, we've been talking about this since the first time Carlos Martinez came up and pitched out of the bullpen and everybody was like, oh wait, is he a closer now? And you and I were like, No, he's very much not. But the question continues to be, how do you get the most value out of Carlos Martinez? And that's a fair question. I just don't think it's really fair to ask it when you're trying to find out if he's healthy, because a guy who's not, it's like saying the same thing about Adam Wainwright. I mean, when he was healthy this last season, he was great. And turns out he wasn't really healthy for like the three seasons before that. So it's hard to say what his actual potential was when it's health that's keeping him from getting there. I guess that's my point. Like with Carlos Martinez, let's just see if he's actually healthy before we try to determine his fate as far as whether he's going to be average or above average.
Yeah. And I think that's absolutely fair. And I think that you're right. If he is healthy, he's probably going to be above average. We don't have this discussion. We don't have to worry about it. He's going to be pretty obvious that he's going to be a starter. I mean, you know, there are times where pitchers, you know, have some good years early on and then fade off. But Carlos is still young. I mean, he's only going to be pitching in his season 28, age 28 season coming up. So there's no expectation that he's, you know, peaked already or anything like that. So, yeah, I think we could see him be, I mean, will he be back to one of the top pitchers in the National League? I don't know about that. He might be, but he's still going to be well enough that you're going to want him in the rotation, because rotation innings are hard to find. Really, really good rotation innings. You know, again, nothing against Daniel Ponce de Leon and, you know, all those guys, but there's a difference between covering those innings and having them be good innings. And right. you know, those guys are adequate and they're fine, especially if they've got an offense behind them. But I don't think you want them in your rotation all year long. So, and unfortunate for them because they're kind of getting to that point where, you know, they're not going to have a whole lot more opportunities at Memphis. There's not, you know, whether options or, you know, just different, you know, and so it either means a trade to some team that needs pitching a little bit more or, you know, finding something else for them. I don't know, but, you know, they are, and we've talked about this with the outfielders too. It's all this talent, it's major league talent. Let's put it this way. It may not be super major league talent, but it's talent that needs to be at the major league level, both in the rotation and in the outfield and in places, is getting to the point where it needs to be on the roster, and not everybody can be there. And so that makes for some, should make for some interesting decisions. However, so far, not so much.
Yeah. You know, that's the whole talent as currency thing that we often talk about on this podcast that doesn't seem to translate as well with this front office as maybe we think it should, but they have plenty of options. They have plenty of opportunities to either get better or to make themselves better. We'll see if it happens.
And speaking of getting better, the biggest place the Cardinals have to get better is in the lineup. And so far, the Cardinals have not done that, at least in adding anything for it, because the only move they have made, as again, we pointed out, was a starting pitcher or a starter slash reliever, depending on how things work out. The lineup is basically the same as it was, except for the fact that Marcell Ozuna is technically not a Cardinal, although he hasn't signed with anybody else, so it's possible he would return, and we can talk about that in a bit. But, you know, Tara, I know you were talking before the show about John Mozeliak speaking this morning on the radio about why they think that the lineup will be better this year.
Yeah, you know, it's not necessarily new information that we haven't heard from John Mozeliak before, but first of all, hat tip to Tom Ackerman, who is just the best and like the nicest human being, but also really great at getting some sort of content out of John Mozeliak that doesn't sound like it's a canned, rehearsed answer that we've heard a million times. So he was asking him about this idea that the Cardinals can, you know, get better by being better. and that sort of sounds like a joke, but it's really what they're banking on this year. And a lot of that has to do with year two of Jeff Albert. And John Mozeliak reiterated that they feel like at some point last season, they realized they tried to hit the ground. I think the way he said it was, we tried to run before we tried to walk with this entirely revamped hitting philosophy. And I would love, they're not going to talk about it publicly because they don't want to give away any sort of trade secrets, but I would love to know what that means, what was so novel about this hitting philosophy that it was impossible for major league hitters to wrap their heads around. I would love to have that conversation with someone at some point. But the fact is, and the point John Mozeliak reiterated, was that they just tried to do too much. They tried to do too much too fast, and it ended up hurting them instead of helping them. So he feels like, he was saying with Tom Ackerman on Sunday, that they've broken everything down individually for players. And, you know, the flip side of that is that now Jeff Albert has a year with these guys and knows hopefully more about how they can handle information and how they process it and what they actually need in order to use whatever his approach is to their benefit, as opposed to being overwhelmed by it. So there was talk about guys who were already in Jupiter, guys who are already working on this new adaptation of the hitting philosophy, and the fact that it's more of a cohesive voice at this point this season compared to where they were last season. I know we talked a little bit when Badaska was let go that was part of the problem, that there was this sort of conflicting dialogue going back and forth between what these guys should do, and maybe eliminating that has helped eliminate some of the confusion there as well. So it sounds, and even John Mozeliak, I appreciated that he said, you know, it's from the perception is that nothing's happening, but actually a lot is happening. And it's impossible for me to know what that really looks like and what that really means. We could sit here and say, yeah, sure, you say that, but you could just get better by adding people to your lineup. But, you know, that's not the route they chose. So it's easy for me to sit here in my living room, nowhere near Jeff Albert or any of the actual hitters for the Cardinals, and say that they're not doing enough. But I perhaps naively am at this point, and perhaps because I have no other choice, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, at least to see if they have been able to sort of digest this new philosophy a bit more, or at least in a different way for year number two. We'll see.
Yeah, we will see. I guess part of me is trying to figure out how much better does everybody have to be to, you know, one, cover for Marcell Ozuna. So, I mean, he's not back, and depending on who's going to be in that spot, and then to make this team offensively palatable, I guess maybe the word to use. I mean, are we talking, you know, does everybody need to be better by 10%, 15%? Because you could also figure, I mean, is Tommy Edman going to be this guy that he was last year? I mean, Tommy Edman can still be very good, but, you know, he may take a step back in a little bit more exposure and a few other things like that. So, you know, I understand what they're doing, and you're right. It very well may, I mean, they are all in on this, on Jeff Alberts. I mean, they've, you know, gotten new, like you said, fired Badeska, fired Greer, those two guys that were kind of looked at as like the savior of the offense, right? When Schilt took over and we got rid of, they sent Mabry packing, everybody's like, oh, great, Greer, Rabaska, these guys have done so well in the minors, and now they're not in the organization, and they've got a lot of other hitting instructors throughout the system that are on board with Jeff Albert's philosophy. So they believe in this, and they believe that it's going to be very successful, and I can understand that it's going to take some time. I just, you know, part of me, you know, even if everybody gets better, is that going to be enough? And you know, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But it feels like, you know, maybe they've missed some opportunities. And who knows? Maybe Dylan Carlson comes up and is a Rookie of the Year candidate, and that takes care of a lot of these things. But it's still an interesting way to gamble on this. And I guess it helps that they won, you know, they were their division champs, and very well maybe again.
I think the one thing that I would say is that I think it depends on what you mean by how much better do they have to be, right? Are we talking about hitting more home runs? Are we talking about more doubles? Are we talking about getting on base more? Because at some point in 2019, everyone in the Cardinals lineup was on fire, right? It's just the consistency. It's being able to avoid the super low lows for the sake of the super high highs, and maybe getting more than one guy hot at a time. So I guess the one reason that I think I can see this working to some degree is because everyone in that lineup has shown what their potential is at some point. And if you can sort of balance that out, even it out a little bit so that it's not all or nothing with this offense, it would make a huge difference. Because how many times did the Cardinals have, you know, a runner at third with less than two outs and couldn't drive it in? That one thing improving doesn't have to be a grand slam every time they have the bases loaded, but that could have turned the tide of so many games last year. So I guess the reason that I may, like I said, perhaps naively, I feel like this is not entirely an unfair setup for this team in 2020 is that all of these guys can hit. They just didn't hit consistently. And that's what was so frustrating with a guy like Paul DeJong, right? We saw him just light the world on fire at times and then swing out of his shoes at a pitch that he couldn't hit if he, you know, there's just no way he's going to hit it, right? So I guess that's why I feel like this, it's not so far out of the realm of possibility that if there's a way to make them more consistent, to give them a better approach at the plate so that they're not stuck only hunting fastballs or whatever it is that they were doing last year, if that approach can shift and adapt with the game as the game changes, then I think they'll be in a better position to score those runners from third with less than two outs, or to, you know, just keep the line moving instead of get two guys on base and then strike out three times in a row or whatever it is. So I don't think they're that far away from all of us feeling much better about this lineup. But I do think that even if that happens, they're still not the most impressive lineup in the Central, much less in the National League, which is why there's still room for concern.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much where I'm at, because I'm also, you know, I'm very concerned that, you know, the defense or base running will take a step back. You know, like Mark Saxon said, you know, it's like a half step back. They'll still be really good, but will they be as good as they were last year? Because they made a huge strides last year, and it wouldn't be surprising if they took a little bit step back. Maybe not. Maybe they'll be about as good. It's not unheard of to say that they would stay in those realms. But you know what? They had five different people with the nominations for a Gold Glove. That's a lot. Yeah. And I don't know if that happens every year. And, you know, the pitching staff is, we'll see how that goes. Of course, again, goes back to Carlos Martinez. You know, if Carlos Martinez is in the rotation, that's pitching staff gets a lot better very quickly. So, you know, I don't know. I think there's still a lot of question marks about this team, but, you know, there's a lot of good things as well. And it also helps that apparently nobody but the Reds wants to challenge them. So, you know, they've got a little bit of breathing room, it feels like, to see what happens. And, you know, who knows, maybe that means that if something goes wrong, they'll actually make a trade inside the season. I don't know that we'd hold our breath on that, but I guess it's a possibility. We're almost done, but I guess one last thing. Do you think that Marcell Ozuna winds up back in St. Louis now that things are, you know, still kind of closing up, it feels like, for him, and different options for him?
Yeah, I feel like there are still some guys out there whose contracts will help define what Marcell Ozuna can get. I don't know if he'll sign before Castellanos, for example, or you know, these guys that are still kind of dangling out there. But I think that, you know, for a while I was kind of leaning towards the longer it goes, I don't think that really helps the Cardinals get him back. But at this point, it kind of feels like the longer it goes, the more he's not going to want to be one of those guys that doesn't sign till after spring training. Plus, he's already made it clear that he would like to be back with the Cardinals. But I think Alex and I were talking about this a little bit, and I talked a little bit with Kyle Reese, actually, in a very weird sort of tandem episode of Prospect After Dark. That was an experience. I would do it again in a heartbeat, but I don't think anyone was prepared for that. But we were talking about Marcell Ozuna and the fact that I feel like the Cardinals didn't necessarily make Ozuna a part of their plan, but if he falls in their lap, sure, why not? And then see what you can get from there. I think it gets a little complicated then with all the other outfielders they have. But as far as Marcell Ozuna is concerned, he seemed very clearly to want to come back, but the Cardinals didn't want him back for more than 1 year. So I don't know if I expect that if it has to be a 2 year contract, that the Cardinals are going to go that far. I think if it's a 1 year deal and then let Marcell Ozuna try again, that would be fine for both sides if the Ozuna camp is willing to do that. But I just really don't really see it happening if it's more than a year. And I don't know if he's going to take anything less than a multi-year deal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm with you on that, because I do think that the Cardinals aren't going to want to really do another long-term deal, but you know, would they go 2 years or a year in an option? I don't know. Because, you know, there's some guys with Fowler coming off and at the end of 21, and you know, who knows what they'll do with Harrison Bader, but there's so many others. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like that's something the Cardinals would do, but I don't know that I'd rule it out either.
I will say, John Mozeliak with Tom Ackerman on Sunday, I found it very, very interesting the way that John Mozeliak avoided saying Ozuna was not coming back, but also said we have to replace this offense from last year. it was like he sort of tripped over himself to say, you know, the question was about these young guys and how they're going to make their mark or whatever. And Mozeliak was saying something about, you know, it is a little bit difficult when we have to, you know, try to replace the awkward pause what we had last year. And it was very clear that he was trying not to say replacing Ozuna, because that's still sort of floating out there. But he also did say I thought it was interesting, particularly in relation to Dylan Carlson, Randy Rosarena, Lane Thomas, and Tyler O'Neill, that it's his words were very much like a tryout for them at spring training this year, and they'll see what happens between those guys. So the we've heard it's an open competition before, mm-hmm. and it hasn't been. So I will be curious to see how that plays out. It would certainly be a much different story if Marcell Ozuna is back with the Cardinals for 2020.
Yeah, because I mean, it becomes a little bit difficult to say we're trying to do, trying to improve and trying to take that step forward when a guy that could hit 30 home runs and has, connections to your team is still sitting out there and you decide to, try to see what you have internally. Yeah. Now, I get why they would, and I get that it's possible that you could see, some sort of combination of Thomas and a Rosarena and Carlson and all that doing as well or better than Marcell Ozuna. But on the flip side of that, if you were really willing to make some things a competition, you could have Marcell Ozuna and those guys because you could move out Fowler and Harrison Bader. But I don't feel like the Cardinals are wanting to do that. I mean, I don't.
Fowler and Bader were not in the conversation when Joe Mozeliak said it was a tryout.
Yeah, and that's understandable. Well, maybe. It's understandable on Fowler a bit more than maybe Bader, just because of. But it's also kind of putting one arm behind your back to try to improve this thing. If you've got guys, like Thomas and Rosemary, guys that probably should have played more last year, how are they going to get the time now if you're still going to commit to a guy in Dexter Fowler that bounced back last year but still was not really league average? So I don't know how they do it, but I'm sure we'll find out as the days go along. I imagine they will give it a shot. So, Tara and I will probably be back with you probably around winter warmup. That'll probably be the next time any actual news happens. I guess if John Mozeliak is listening and wants to go out and sign somebody or trade for Nolan Arredondo in this next week, we can do a show next week. But, so John, you hear, if you want a show, you know what to do. Until then, Tara and I will be back with you winter warmup when there should be some sort of news. At least the players will be around to talk. And we'll respond then. So until then, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.